Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast.
In this episode, we talk with wise woman grandmother Karina Serinen about family, the role of elders in our culture, and how she came to walk the shamanic path. Grandmother Karina leads us on a shamanic ceremony to help heal the hungry ghost inside. And together, we envision a return to the village culture where each member contributes their unique gifts and in turn receives crucial support from the community. Notice how this vision resonates with you and listen closely to your soul's requests for support as we dream this new reality into being.
We're your hosts, sisters Natalie
and Lizzie Ross.
Dream Freedom Beauty is a podcast for free spirits who yearn to connect deeply with their intuition and manifest their dream lives in harmony with the earth.
You can find the podcast show notes at dreamfreedombeauty.com. Grandmother Karina, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you for asking, Lizzie.
So you are an elder. Can you tell us how that's different than someone who's simply older?
Wow. The profound question of the last 10 to 15 years of my life. And so first, I just bow down to the deep inquiry that you just offered to our listeners and offered to the soul bodies of people on this planet. There are many beings, as we go through the ages and stages on this wheel of life, who look forward to retiring, who look forward to collecting old age security, who look forward to not working anymore. And that is a very white, patriarchal, European, fear-based experience. It's an expression that arose not through culture that is indigenous or native, not from a wisdom-based culture, not from a tribal-rooted culture, but it rose from serfs and lords and ladies and monarchy and royalty and separation from nature. And so those are old people. In our North American view, we call those people senior citizens. And they can hardly wait to get that 65-year-old allowance at the end of every month that is their supposed acknowledgement that they've worked and lived a good life. That oldness is aging. It ages people. It allows people from that time and generation to escape from the responsibility of being accountable for their wisdom, from being accountable and responsible for looking at their life and doing a review and gathering up all their experiences as insight and realizations and offering it to the younger generation. It's an escapism that sends them to golf courses, it sends them to spas, it sends them to hospitals, it sends them to insane asylums with dementia and all kinds of crazy diseases that we never had before, when old people were really truly elders and sat in villages and were brought chickens and worked in the gardens and raised the medicine for the village. So an elder is that latter aspect of the soul body. All of this is part of the soul. There's nothing right or wrong or good or bad. It is just a view that is either externally driven by monetary rewards and or external acknowledgement for having lived a long life, not necessarily a quality life, or an internally driven, motivated being that has fully realized the potential to be human, which is to be co-creative. So an elder is one who has awakened. An elder is one who awakens. An elder ultimately, and I'm on the edge of this, frankly, ultimately lives his or her life in total prayer, in contemplation, in silence, in stillness. And I can offer to you my truth that I have had 4 3-month retreats. I have 1 full-month retreat to support one of my young apprentices when she went to the Sacred Valley in the Temple of Light in Peru. And I've done many, many 3 and 4 day retreats in the bush. And I've lived in my car in my tent, and I've lived in the forests of my life. And I don't consider that poor. I don't consider that rejection or being outcast. My view is that it's wild, it's indigenous, it's native, it's natural, it's frugal, it's simple, and I have very little overhead.
Wow. Yeah.
You said so many things that lit me up.
Before we go on, I just want, I hear some sort of like thumping sound sometimes. Is that?
I know. I am not making an apology, but you know what it is? It's two really rambunctious kids.
Oh, okay. That's fine then.
Running upstairs, and I love them deeply, and frankly, I'd like them to run it all out.
Yeah,
that's great. If it was something, if you were like hitting your computer or something, I just wanted to...
No, goddess. No, I would never do that.
No, okay, then so good. Then we'll carry on. How and when did you find your own elders in your life?
Uh-huh. Well, it has to do with the dream. You know that.
Well, tell us more. Tell our listeners.
Okay, well, this big piece was, I grew up in a Finn town in Northern Ontario in Sault Ste. Marie, and I grew up with a mom who got married to my dad. She was 18 and dad was 24, and she got pregnant in the first 2 weeks, so I was born of virgins. Yay!
Wow.
My mom was conceived of virgins. Yay! My dad was conceived of virgins. Yay!
Why are you saying yay?
Well, in this day where there's such an onslaught of over-sexualized human beings and over-sexualized communication, especially through the internet and the media, I really feel strongly that I hold a very grounded position about the wisdom of staying in one's own celibacy and not exploring sexuality too soon and having a family whose environment doesn't shame, which my family actually did because my dad really had an issue about that. And my mother just chose to ignore it. So I was the one that broke that pattern and broke that mold. So I brought to me, through choosing those parents, I brought to me elders. In Fintown, we had older Finnish people that never learned English. And it was very similar to the Italian town, the Polish town, the Ukrainian town, you know, all these towns that live within towns or live within cities, like Portuguese neighborhoods or Sri Lankans or, you know, Punjabis. They maintain the culture by allowing the old ones, and these are old ones and some of them are elders, to maintain their language, their costumes, their cultures, their rituals, their habits. And so I grew up with that. I grew up with three older Finnish women who we call dattis, which translated means lady, which is very polite, very respectful. And my mother was really overrun by the death of her mother-in-law by the time I was one, inherited at 19 and a half a hotel in Fintown, and took it on full on. So my mother was, in the mother wheel, a rainbow woman. She was a full-on co-creative. And her purpose was to do the best she could to provide. The subversive or the shadow part of that was in order to keep my father happy. So you always need to remember that there is the beloved lover aspect, but there's also the shadow. There's an aspect of the sage and wisdom, but there's also an addict. So this teaching was inculcated in me, and I had no discernment when I was little. I just knew I loved these older women, and I felt the elder in one or two of them, or moments of eldership where they weren't frazzled by three kids under five. You know, if they had a sense of humor working on the mangala, which means in Finnish, it means one of those round ironing machines that ironed the men's white shirts and ironed the sheets for the hotel.
Oh, wow.
You know, there was a sense of humor about Selma. We called her pakana, which means go tickle your belly button. And, you know, Finnish has its own little cultural traits, like go tickle your belly button or smell your belly button is like, wow, like, why would you ever want to tell anybody to do that? But it always made us laugh. You know? So she had that wisdom of laughter, and she had that elder nature revealed itself. And because we were raised with older women, there was the feeling of extended family. There was the feeling of the wisdom of my grandfather, who lived in Sudbury at that time, my father's father, and just sitting at his feet literally in the living room, and listening to him, watching him, observing him, listening to beautiful classical symphonies. And there was something as a child to watch a 6'4" grandpa sitting in a great big leather chair and something going on in his eyes, behind his eyeballs, in his brain when he was listening to classical music. And that was elder. That was his elder nature. I think we mistake the word elder for somebody that like is the elder all the time. I do have an elder who is an elder all the time, Sequoia Trueblood. I bow down to his teaching and I really respect him. He is an elder all the time because he carries his pipe and he does nothing but ceremony now. He does nothing but prayer. That's the true elder. I'm in my 68th year. I'm not there yet. But there are glimpses of the elder nature, the teacher, leader, visionary, manifester, mentor nature that rises and is expressed through my soul and through those I've surrounded myself with right from the word get-go. So in terms of Indigenous elder, the one that came firmly and clearly into my life at a very, very young age, in terms of my age now, was when I was 41, 42. And you may wonder, well, you know, that's not young. Well, it is in terms of elder and medicine. It's very young. My abuela is now in her 80s, and she's really offering the dance of life, the divine orders. She's just amazing. And
how did she come into your life?
Well, my elder, let me just speak about my elder first. She's my abuela. So there's a difference between a grandmother in your life and a grandfather in your life and an elder in your life. So Sequoia Trueblood came into my life through my sweat lodge. My second husband and I bought a healing house, and we made an intentional vow that we would never let children fall through the cracks of time and space when their parents were in arguments, separation, or divorce. Because we learned that from my two children and the suffering they went through because of my first husband and I not reconciling, and his honestly absolute terror of reconciling with me. He was just so afraid of the vision that I held and the greatness that my family had given to me as a legacy. So my second husband and I decided we never wanted anybody else's kids to suffer. And so we started a healing house, and we bought a house from one of my University of Ottawa students. And the third or fourth year, a group of women in my Reiki mastery training said to me, why don't we build a sweat lodge at the bottom of the hill just above the little lake in Village Mocascade? And I said, let's do it. So they did it for my birthday. And we built a sweat lodge, and in the tradition of the sweat lodges, it was really sloppy, but it was well-intended, and the star was a little off-base, and it was kind of off-kilter, and the 14 women and I, we just had a ball doing it. And when we sweat, we didn't realize the potency of those prayers. Beginning the ceremonies began the rest of my life. It ended a cycle of my life. It ended any experience of calling myself single mother. It was a place for my bereftness of the end of the potential of that 21-year marriage. It began a cycle of the medicine wheel. It put me in the center of my own fire as a woman chief, and I realized the legacy and the hereditary chief nature of sitting as a woman chief in that lodge. And that attracted the elders. It attracted seven different pipes, different chinupas, different traditions. It attracted a beautiful fire keeper who is a black belt Tai Chi Chuan Chen lineage teacher. It attracted a training program for my second husband who became my dog soldier. And we sweat every new moon, full moon for 3.5 years, every 2 weeks, and sometimes on solstices and equinoxes, and sometimes at the request of others. And in that process, the ceremony opened me up to the dream. And the dreaming was at the very top of the lodge to the stars, and the dreaming connected me to other lodges and to elders. And I was called to go to a ceremony in Kentville, Ontario, and I walked in. No, I didn't even walk into the great big auditorium. I was at the table checking in, and there was this 6'2" white-haired man whose smile shone of silver and gold. Like, I don't know how his teeth were like that. There was just something about him, and pure white hair, 3 inches below his shoulders. And his wife, Marlon, was full-blooded Mohawk, Her hair was down to her waist. I'd never seen an extraordinarily beautiful, handsome couple like this. Never in my life. Never. It was like I was stunned. And there was just a gentle aura around them of welcome. And we had over 150 people in the auditorium or the gymnasium. And we were seated in multiple circles, concentric circles. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was in a spaceship. And I was looking in the center, and I closed my eyes and went up to my third eye. And it was like, wow, we all landed together. You know, this is one of the answers, right? We all landed together in a cohort. And it was the beginning of my training with elders. And he showed me that you always put the children closest to the fire. And then the old ones or the senior citizens are the next ones, and then the women, and then the men. And then there's always an aisle in the front of the ship or the front of the sweat lodge or the front of the longhouse or the front of the teepee or the front of the igloo or the front of the yurt. There's always a pathway to that fire. And children, mothers, elders, olders, they don't sit in that pathway. It is the pathway of karma. You walk on that, you crawl on your hands and knees into that circle, and you bow down because you're so grateful that you finally met each other again. And in that dreaming awake, we are awakened to our familiarity. We're awakened to the knowing that we've been here before. We are here to nourish and nurture each other. We are not here to be blind soldiers to an externalized law. This is no like you must obey this or we're going to punish you. This is falling on the knees of remembering the true spirit of the law, which is that everyone is sacred and everything is holy. And so when I met this couple, I began another level of my awakening. And I literally sat in humility and did the dance and walked around the circles and listened to the drum and realized that this was going to be my path. And then I took all that teaching, was a full day, and I took every chance I could whenever any of our community, we had an extended community already, whenever anybody said, Sequoia is going to give a teaching, I showed up. I dropped everything. I changed everything that was on my agenda to say, I am going. There was something incalculably magnetic to that connection. I had to do it. And the more that I sat with him, I brought my second husband to him. I brought my apprentices to him. I eventually brought one of my lovers to him. I stayed in that zone of staying connected to that teaching for eight years. And yes, I sat with many other grandmothers and grandfathers, and including Grandfather William Commanda, but there was something specific about Sequoia's presence on the planet, the intensity of his prayer, which was grounded in Mohawk, the intensity of his personal story, his honesty, his vulnerability, his vision, his experience, and his expression. That mirrored for me the potential to be an elder. And I wanted to walk that path of possibility.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That sounds powerful and beautiful. So you now live with different families in the old village way, where the shaman grandmother is always housed and fed and clothed and taken care of. Mm-hmm. Can you describe just a little bit of what it's like living in this way?
Well, first you have to have a really great sense of humor.
That's always helpful, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
That's right. The second thing is, you have to know when to fold and when to move on.
Ooh, yeah. Talk about a skill.
Yeah. You need to know that you're not fighting for belonging. You're not struggling to survive. You need to know that you are the visitation. You have been prayed for, usually by the children, and sometimes one of the spouses. Sometimes it's the ancestors who are in the invisible realm on the other side who have prayed for a shaman grandmother to show up for this family. In this current circumstance, I was asked to come by the mummy. who I met in Sayulita, Mexico last year when we were doing a Way of Counsel breathwave work. We were doing, a 5-day intensive in Sayulita, and she came from Whistler. And she said to me afterwards, she was became my one-to-one client in my coaching practice, and then she said, my home is your home. And I looked at her and I said, are you sure? and it was like, do you really know what you're asking for? And she said, yes. And so last fall, after my granddaughter was born October 23rd in Squamish Hospital, hello. I called Wendy and I said, look, my family's up in Alpine now. They've rented a log cabin and, just to have the winter there. My son works here in Whistler. And I need a place because they have a one-bedroom log cabin. I don't have a couch to sleep on there. And I don't have a room to sleep in. So would you be willing to house me? And they said, she and her husband said, yes. Mm. So I came at first for a day and a half to feel it all out. And then we did a drumming circle with the kids and a shamanic journey to the roots of the family tree.
Wow.
The roots of the daddy and the roots of the mummy and the roots of this new evolutionary form called family. And we did a purpose journey. What is the purpose of the daddy at the roots, the purpose of the mummy, and the purpose of the children? And to seat them in the roots of the family tree at a table where there's enough for everybody. Mm. I wanted to break up a program that was really grounded in scarcity and not enough presence of mummy. And then I found out later that there was quite a bit of guilt and shame, and that I was really literally there for the mother at the request, actually, of not only her mother, but of the daddy. Mm. Even though she was the one to invite me, it was really the daddy who wanted the intervention.
Wow, I bet there's mothers out there right now who resonate with that feeling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Listening.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the behavior of the children changed. And every time I land, now just fast forward, so I stayed 2.5 days in November, and then I did other things that I got an invitation, actually, to yurt sit with the dog and a cot. I couldn't say no to that. No, I had Christmas in a yurt with a beautiful Boko dog and a white Volkswagen Golf diesel station wagon. So my life is really quite good.
Yeah.
You know, the invitations keep coming. I just want to come back to this family because I really feel their courage, and I want to honor to the listeners that it takes a lot of courage to have a shaman grandma live with you. Because the bottom line is, I'm going to see everything. Mm-hmm. And you can't hide anything. So you might as well stop pretending, get real, get intimate, get vulnerable, and get honest.
Oh, yeah.
Or don't invite me, because it'll just confront, and the shadow is going to fight me, or the ego is going to fight me, and I'll pack up and leave, because that's not my way. So I want to thank this family, because 2 weeks ago they had me here for 2 weeks. And I have to say, the unfolding day by day was, if anything, the word that would be most appropriate was miraculous.
Mm.
Because we finally have the little one who's 4. I've kinesiologically assessed her regularly. We finally have agreement on the part of the mummy and daddy that she's lacking nutrification for the amount of energy she runs through her body.
Oh, wow.
And so now we've changed her diet. We're not struggling to power over, control her behavior. We're going right to food. What does your body need? Teaching her how to tap by tapping our own bodies to release the hungry ghost that rises up when she's starving for affection, starving for attention, and totally demonic. Yeah, so now she's calm. She's actually eating huge meals.
Can you hear the thunder and the rain here?
Yes, I love it.
I know many of our listeners probably feel their own hungry ghost, and I felt mine at times. I wonder if you have advice, insight, guidance for folks who want to heal that.
That's your shamanic question, Lizzie. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
All right, listeners, beloved ones, ancestors, invisible ones, and visible ones, we ask you to come and sit with us at the roots of an ancient grandmother tree. In the forest of your life, there lives an ancient old-growth grandmother. She is as wide as 12 arms stretched around her. When you hug all of these other 11 other hands, you will realize the width and the breadth and the height and the depth of the ghost. For the ghost has inhabited you because you have forgotten. So Timkashla Wankantanka, Great Spirit, Yumala, God, Goddess, Oneness, we call upon you. We call upon you to sit with us through presence as we stand at the roots of this ancient tree in which there lives a hungry ghost. O ancient ones, O invisible and invisible and indivisible ones, we thank you for this sacred moment, the Holy of Holies, for the star beings, the star elders, the star teachings, for the stars that spangle the branches of this ancient tree. Thank you for bringing us back to the tree of truth. We call upon the eagle, the condor, the Quetzalcoatl, the winged ones, to bring us to purpose and vision today. Sachamama, the serpents of light, to move up our spines, to clear that energy through our spines. We call upon the Yegwar and the medicine of the infinite way between the hearts of Lizzie and Natalie and all our listeners and grandmother. We call upon the grandmothers and grandfathers of prayers of the totems and allies, the four-leggeds, the winged ones, the creepy crawlies, the insects, the standing ones, the spirit of the medicine plants, the amanita, the aboga, the ayahuasca, the huachuma, the Peruvian torch, the great teachings of the Santos Niños, the holy and sacred mushrooms. We give thanks for the medicine of the indigenous cultures, that we may return once more to satiate this deep hunger for truth, for truth alone will set you free. So we invite you now, spirit family, to take a seat. One of the directions is calling you around this old grandmother tree. The roots are as thick as two thighs. So find a way to nestle down and see in your third eye how old you are. How old are you when the hunger first struck you? Are you preconception? Are you first gestation of 3 months? Second 3 months? Third 3 months? Are you in labor and delivery and hungry for truth to awaken to the light of birth? Are you already here as an infant? Are you a child learning to walk on her or his own 2 feet? Are you one who's ready to ride the bicycle of life? Are you pubescent, an adolescent, a young adult? Are you midlife? In this quandary of ethics and principles and how to live life fully? Are you a senior, older, or an elder? Are you your future self, your unknown potential, which is your greatest aspect right now? For it is the mystery. So here you are. Whatever age you are is perfect in this moment. But the hunger is here. And I want you to touch where the hunger lives with your loving, healing hands. Imagine that your hands have emerald palms, emerald green palms. Does your ghost live in your brain, right or left side? Does your ghost live behind your eyes? Does your ghost live in your mouth? Does your ghost live in your teeth, in your throat, in your heart? Where does your ghost live? Does it live in your lungs so you can't breathe? Does it live so deeply in you that you live with distress? That you have mental disturbances and wonder if you're truly insane? This is a moment of wisdom, darlings. Insanity is separation. Keep listening to my voice. Trust this voice and this guidance for a moment and a moment more. Does it live in your solar plexus? In the entanglement of thousands of nerve plexuses, are you still feeling controlled, fighting, fleeing, escaping, addicted to some belief about yourself? Or can you relax under your emerald hands? Are you lost as a ghost in your navel, in the ghost of your mother, the ghost of your grandmother, the ghost of a haunting of an ancestor, right or left side? Are you in your womb or groin? Put your hands there, for this is where you came from, the seeds and the bowl. Or does the ghost live in your roots, grabbing and hungry, wanting to pull you down? Pull you down. And in this moment, gather saliva in your mouth. Set the intention that every molecule of your self-produced liquid is unconditional love. For are we not all hungry for love? Now swallow that saliva love. Track it down your esophagus and clear your thyroid and parathyroid. Let it wash your larynx and pharynx that you no longer speak the lie of separation of they. Come down into your heart thymus, inch and a half below your collarbone. Let love satiate the hunger in your heart. Gather more saliva. Once more, our strong intention, for we all live by intention and agreement. Let these molecular particulars of liquid self-produced be love. And swallow. Down between the breasts, through the agathos, through the grief, through the xiphoid, into the stomach. Let your stomach be fed today by love, here at the roots of the grandmother's tree. Once more, molecularly signaturing your saliva with the intention of love. Nothing you have to do to prove that you're capable of receiving. There's no remuneration here. There's no reward or punishment. This is intention. This is your agreement with your soul to purposely generate the signature of love. Swallow. Track it down. Descend. Your body has a natural central channel. Down into the umbilicus. Down into the navel. Feel the spiral in the navel. Love for your birth mother, letting go all story. Love for the earth mother, letting go all epigenetic trauma. Love all the way out your back body to the universal mother. Ah. And now take that love to the dianten, an inch and a half below the belly button, an inch inside the body to the womb groin, to the place of personal power. Bring your focus, intent, agreement to the dianten and feel the pulse of life. Feed the ghost life, prana. Key, attention. Feed the deficit of attention by gifting attention. Now watch where your breath goes as you inhale and exhale. How deeply you go down to the huiyin between the genitals and the anus. To the connection to the earth, feel the pulse of a kabillion years of earth life, for she has been here co-evolving with us, with many species that are now extinct that we don't ever know about. She has evolved four times and she's in her fifth turning, and who knows what will happen to humanity in our ignorance and arrogance when she turns over. Who knows what will happen when she pulls the blanket away from our ignoring eyes? Who knows what will happen when she shakes us out of the bed of our slovenliness? Who knows what will happen when she takes us by the shoulders and says, "You arrogant little fools, do you not know who your mother is? What your material form is created of? The molecules of air, of fire, of water, of earth, of my body. You are of my body. Your life force is of the universe. And this fire is the first fire of the sun. And you are all this. You are no story but creation, a mythology, a cosmology unfolding from mystery into this moment now. That's all you are. And in this moment, as you swallow once more and breathe, life force and breath as one, allow yourself to feel what's happened now. How is the ghost? Has it transformed from fear of not enough? Only you know the answer. You have allowed through faith, through trust, through surrender, through acceptance. You have allowed the voice of this grandmother to guide you. And only you know what has unfolded. So tender it, cultivate it, be kind to your observations and knowings now. Don't share it with anyone for the next 48 hours. Write it out, draw it, go to the woods, wash in the rain, listen to the thunder in the heart of the earth, and you shall know how to fuel your own vehicle and vessel of life and let go of the ghost, the addiction, the escape artist, the avoider, the wounded child, even the outcast. All of these can be tended to with mercy by visualizations and dreams such as this, delivered from grandmothers to grandmothers, from grandmothers to grandmothers, to grandchildren, and to you as future grandparents of your own lineage. Omateat. Omatakuyasam. For all our relations, we dedicate this to Pachamama, to the Earth Mother. For we are her, children of the Earth. So slowly come back to this moment, to this broadcast, throughout North America, through this atmosphere, into the sphere of sound, and on the count of three, just create any sound that comes to you. One, two, three. Hey.
Ahoy.
Hiya! And that's why kids love having shamanic grandmothers in their houses.
That was a beautiful ceremony. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
All right, let's back to questions. So I'm curious, because we've been talking about families, what is needed in families?
That's a huge question. I think if I go back to school called wisdom, I will write a PhD on family.
I bet you could write many.
Yeah, and I feel like in my storage bin in Squamish, BC, I probably have 10 to 14 journals dedicated to observations and realizations from my own family, from my lineage family, from my spirit family, and the children that came through me and now the next generation of family. So I would offer to you and to your listeners to start with, what is the word family? F-A-M-I-L-Y. And imagine it's an acronym in that there's a secret in those letters. F stands for. And just say whatever F stands for. The first thing, there's no right or wrong, good or bad. What does A stand for? What does M stand for? What does I stand for? What does L stand for? What does Y stand for? And now that's your analogy. And what I observe is that when people come together, say we follow the conditioned path, and people come together and they meet and they date and they have conversations and share values and and they feed each other, and they have an experience of sitting in each other's families and sitting with meals at each other's families, and they experience each other's cultures. There is an exploration and discovery of what is family. So right from a very young age, in early pubescence and adolescence, we start dating families. We never date one person. Mm. We date a family. And we look at what is the dynamic, consciously or unconsciously, between the person that we're dating and their mother, father energies, and their sibling energies, and their animal energies, and their contexts in homes. We actually do an assessment, consciously or unconsciously. And we choose that vibration in resonance, which is either a completion, i.e. the little ghost or the wounded child goes, well, I feel comfortable at that family's table because I didn't get that at my family table. Or it could be that this feels very familiar and this is confirming and affirming, and I can grow in this family, and I feel very nurtured by one person in this family, and by two or three, and then it's like a democratic vote, then I will vote for that family and I will continue dating that person and I will have sex with that person either before marriage or after marriage. And then we begin our own families. Mm. That assessment is what's missing in our consciousness on planet Earth right now. In tribal culture, in the wisdom teachings, there still is an assessment. There still is the elder, the medicine woman, the grandmother, the grandfather that sits with the kids at a certain age and tells the stories about their own relationships. Now, here's an example of how deep this can go in family. In the Kogis, in the high Madre Sierra mountains of Colombia, the Maumas are the strongest, most powerful people. They are the ones that cook for the entire village. They give their prayers and blessings to the earth, exchange in Aini, reciprocity, either saliva, tobacco, coca, something to the earth. They harvest for the family. They provide for the family. They raise and acknowledge the awareness of a child's passions and natural proclivities and interests right from a very early age. So if a child, for instance, comes and toddles after grandma as a medicine woman, and I do have one of them in this house who's really toddling after me, then I would say she has the potential to be a medicine woman. So I'm going to pay a different kind of attention to her than I would to her sister, who's much more a performer dancer, because that's not my venue. I'm a medicine woman, but the little one is intrigued with grandma. This morning she said, "Grandma, I would have a shower with you because you sing in the shower every morning." That's recognition. Now, in the Maumas, in the Colombian Kogi tradition, they recognize the children from a very early age, and they start making appointments with the children's destiny. Okay, so you want to go over there and work with the medicine plants. So we're going to start having you early apprenticing. Go over there. You have the potential to get out of your body and travel into the universe. You'll have the potential to be a shaman. We're going to put you in the dark to learn how to see in the dark. You have the potential to carve, because I see that you looking at the person whittling over there, and they're whittling wooden spoons for my soup in the kitchen. So I'm going to put you over there. And so every child has a place. Every child has a purpose. There's no fighting for not enoughness, because the village is the family, is the village, is the family. Mm-hmm. The family feeds the village feeds the family. And the family starts with the mother and father, grandmother, grandfather, having a relationship. Now, take this a few steps further. So imagine we're Kogis, and we've met our true love, and we go to the grandmother and the grandfather, and we say, with shyness, because it's true love, and there's always shyness in true love. It's one of the indicators of true love. And so we go to the grandma and grandpa, we say, I think I've met my betrothed. Now there's a ritual. You know, we don't automatically jump into the sack. We go to the grandmothers and grandfathers first, you know. I think I've met the one that I want to live with the rest of my life? And we're shy about asking that because there's something deep and profound and lineage and hereditary and genetic and nurturing and beyond words. And the grandmother and grandfather would look at each other and smile and chuckle and nudge each other and go, okay, we're going to test this one. But we don't say we're going to test them. We do test them. So we lean over and we look at the young one and we say, so what do you value about this one? What are you looking for? And what have you found? In other words, the dreams are coming true. Remember the dream of beauty and the freedom to choose. This is a path of beauty, path of awakening to beauty. What do you see that's so beautiful about this one? What do you see that is so courageous about this one? Can this one provide for you? Can this one carry your baby for 9 months and labor and deliver the new baby for the village? You know, the parents and grandparents, specifically the grandparents, have that responsibility. Now, fast forward. Click, 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 click. We're going to the top of the mountain. They have gotten married. There's been a huge family festival, like 5 days of eating and drinking the cocoa water and having parties on the top of the mountains. And it's amazing. Everybody celebrates because these two people have found each other. The dreams are manifesting. Mm. They're resonating at the core of their beings that this is not shadow. This is not addiction. This is not a wounded child telling poor me stories to the wounded child. This is the regenerative force of an indigenously rooted culture. Mm. This is what we're missing in North America. So now these two people are virgins. Remember that? Karina's from virgin birth. Very important. And it's a state of mind, you know, not necessarily a state of the vagina. How is- Just to throw a little bit of sex in there. Mm-hmm. So the grandparents and the elders of the village build a sacred matrimonial hut on the top of the mountain. And the young couple is invited in to go to the hamaca. And the elders and grandparents are there in their hamacas or on their mats on the floor. And in the night, they share how to make love. Touch her there. Tickle him there. Move your body here. Taste him here. Lick there. Whisper there. Slowly but surely, the young couple are taught foreplay. And naturally, when it's time, only with respect. Only with permission may you enter. And they bless the consummation of the marriage. They bless the holy sexuality, the potential to serve the cradle board of the future of their culture. This couple is honored because they will bring forth the next ones of the village. Such is the nature of true family. Such is the nature of something called wisdom that is regenerative, restorative, totally confirming that this couple need not fear. They don't know anything about separation or divorce. They have access to shamans, to grandmothers, to grandfathers, to elders. They have access to lineages of wisdom. They have access to great forests, to the tops of mountains from whence cometh all our help. They have access to teaching. And these people are suffering because we have built farms, GMO modified, chemically fertilized at the foot of their mountains. We have created cocaine factories, industries, creating drugs that allow North American and European cultures to be monetized, to create commodities for the earth, wind, fire, and air, and sell them on Bay Street in Toronto and Wall Street in New York. We have created a false intelligence called the internet. This is not intelligence. This is a transmutation, a transmission, and a transcendence of the internet by doing ceremony and teaching over something that is called a computer, bound by a limited view whereas we're offering an unlimited possibility. We're holding a vaster space than the computer, a stratosphere, a noosphere, beyond any sphere. We're holding the holy sound of the sacred ones and channeling it through this to remind ourselves that we lived in the shadow of death long enough. Mm-hmm. The ego must die. We must be amused by our stupidity and reanimate our soul to its own purpose. So that's a little cosmological view of family. It's not my family. It is a family I admire. It is a family's teaching that Sequoia True Blood brought to us, a family that I feel is courageous and needs support and recognition for its teachings to bring us back to beauty, to bring us back to the freedom for children to be all that they are and for elders to be elders, recognized and acknowledged. For all our relations, I give this.
Thank you so much for your time and for your wisdom and for holding this space for all of us who will be one day elders, hopefully, and who are walking in our paths and looking to have examples and leaders in our lives. And so thank you for that. Thank you.
For all our relations, I bow down to both of you and the inner elder that lives within you. Mm-hmm. I look forward to the future of the planet inhabited by people like you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, until next time, many blessings.
Many blessings.
And farewell.
Thank you so much for listening. You can show your gratitude and help others find these conversations by subscribing and leaving a review on iTunes or whatever app you're listening through.
Leaving a review will help us grow this network of earth lovers and intuitive-minded folks. You can also help us share these conversations by liking our Dream Freedom Beauty page and sharing your favorite episode on Facebook. For exclusive content and rewards, support us on Patreon.
Thank you so much, and until next time, many blessings.